Next item on the agenda is number 14, Blue Crab, presentation results of 2009-10 winter dredge survey. Request for public hearing, 2010 regs.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Travelstead. Good to see you. Where you been all day?
Watching. Watching and learning.
Not nice on the outside looking in, is it?
Well, we're going to have some good news for you, and I know you've already read the newspapers and seen the staff reports, but in fact, the news is not only good, it's very good, and
we're glad you didn't have an opportunity to this is a letter that came in a few days ago from the Chesapeake Bay Foundation expressing their opinions on the subject.
I think you were copied on it, so you've probably already seen it, but it's submitted for the record. What I'd like to do is go through the good news and unfortunately also express some concern that we not move away from where we are and have been for the last couple of years, rather stay the course with most of our regulations, and then we'll advise you as to what was discussed at the Crab Management Advisory Committee and ultimately what the staff recommendations are. This is figure one is part of the good news. These are all the results of the winter dredge survey that was conducted jointly by Maryland Department of Natural Resources and the Virginia Institute of Marine Science in 2009 and 2010. I know you're quite familiar with that survey, so I won't go into any of the details about it. But the first bit of good news is for the first time, the total number of crabs in Chesapeake Bay are above the long-term average and is approaching levels that we saw in the early 1990s. This is a very good number, and we hope that it will stay in that range, perhaps go even higher in the years ahead. One word of caution here is that while we see this incredible number in terms of total abundance, the governor said 1 year does not make a trend. We'd like to see that number stay high.
Two years specifically, Jack.
Well, in this case, it's 1 year because for the first time, we're above the long-term average, although we've been in an upward trajectory for several years. We finally got above the horizontal line. The other word of caution is, you know, while we've seen these high levels of abundance in the past, they also, in many cases, seem to be followed by rather large declines in abundance that you can see occurred in 1992 and 1994. So just because you see 1 or 2 years of good abundance doesn't mean that can all disappear overnight. Now, of course, in the early 90s, we didn't have the regulatory program in place that we have today. And so we think, you know, that will prevent those declines. Second bit of good news is that the spawning population of blue crabs is now showing its second year of improvement. It's now well above the interim target of 200 million crabs, up about 315 million crabs at the end of the survey. And that level, too, is approaching levels of spawning age crabs that we saw in the early 90s. And it's now the second year. But again, 2 years doesn't satisfy us that that's going to be a consistent trend. And even if you look back again in the early 90s, even when we saw levels of abundance, they were often followed by periods of low abundance. Again, the regulatory program that we have in place, we think, will hopefully prevent that from happening. You know, 2 years ago when we entered into this program, we told you that based on what we knew about the life history characteristics of the animal, that it had the capability, the characteristics of an animal that would respond quickly and dramatically to management measures if those management measures were strong enough. And I think, lo and behold, that's exactly what we're seeing happen. Can we identify the particular measure out of the suite of measures that you adopted that is responsible for this? No, we can't. All we can say is that the suite of regulations that we have in place now is likely responsible for the numbers that you see. Can we say that it was because we closed the dredge fishery? No. Can we say that it was because we increased the size of the culverts? No. Is it because of the spawning sanctuary? No. All we can say is the sum total of all the measures that we put in place is likely responsible for this. One last point here. The 200 million crab is an interim target. We've said that all along. That number someday will change, likely in 2011. There's currently a new stock assessment underway that's being conducted by both Virginia and Maryland scientists. One of the firms of reference for that stock assessment will be to come up with a final target for spawning age crab abundance. In the meantime, we're stuck with this interim target, and based on that, it would, I think, not be wise to go changing a lot of regulations until we know what that final target is and until the stock assessment is completed and provides us with that number. This is the other very good news that we were waiting for, and that is to not only see an increase in adult abundance, which we can achieve by simply stopping the harvest of adult crabs, but seeing an increase in juvenile abundance, which tells us that in protecting those adults, they have now had an opportunity to spawn. Sufficient numbers of them were protected to now provide us with a very good number on juvenile abundance. And once again, you can see for the first time in many years, the number is now above the long-term average and approaching levels that we saw in the early 1990s. We would hope that that number will stay high in future years, although don't expect it to stay high every single year. I mean, there are other things that affect juvenile survival, like climate and weather patterns and currents and temperature and predators. The fourth bit of good news is that fishing mortality is now, for the second year in a row, been hovering around the target rate of removal, which is 46%. It is not above the horizontal red line that you see there, so overfishing is not occurring. That's a very good thing. And if we keep the regulations in place, we should stay around that yellow line where we want to be. The other bit of good news is that in spite of all the regulations we've placed on the fishery, harvest is up in the bay. It's not up dramatically across the bay. And in fact, if you look in more detail, you will see that, let me flip to this. You will see that that increase in harvest that you just saw occurred mostly in Virginia. And in fact, within the Chesapeake Bay area, last year harvest was up by 30%. This is one of the largest percentage increases in harvest that we have seen in a 20-year period. The way we regulate this fishery, we do not control all of its outputs. In other words, as abundance goes up, harvest is allowed to go up. We do not control the amount of crabs, for instance, that a fisherman can land on any given day, except for a short period in the spring where the limit is 51 bushels. Beyond that, in any given day, the amount of harvest by any fisherman is unlimited. And so as abundance continues to rise, harvest will continue to go up. And that's a good thing, as long as we don't exceed the target exploitation rate. Harvest again went up 30% last year, and because harvest abundance is higher this year, we should expect that harvest this year will increase yet again. So there will be some benefits to the fishermen from that increased harvest, even if we keep all the regulations in place as they are. Let me go back to some of this. This is merely a tabular presentation of all the numbers I showed you before, and it just highlights that, you know, in the periods earlier we saw very high abundances, but they were quite often followed by periods of low abundance. So we've got to be careful about backing off of the regulatory program that we've seen. We see it here again between 92 and 93, 96, 97. This is the list of the primary regulations that have been in place now for a year. These are the measures that we hope you would keep in place at least for another year. I'm not going to go into detail if you have questions. That's, once again, the harvest increase. This is a rather dramatic presentation of how great that 30% increase in harvest was that we saw last year, 08 compared to 09. We've only seen higher percentage increases in harvest one year to the next in 1997 and 1993. Rather dramatic. This is harvest from across Virginia. These numbers include the Eastern Shore as well, and they merely drive home the point of the increased harvest that we had some benefit from in 09. These are includes Beeler Crash as well. One other interesting fact was that last year, as you know, we for the first time closed the entire blue crab sanctuary starting on May 1st. You'll recall we got permission from the General Assembly to close the original portion of the sanctuary on May 1st. You did do that by regulation. And in spite of the entire sanctuary being closed, during that first 2 weeks in May, we saw the highest levels of harvest in the remaining portion of Chesapeake Bay than we've seen since the early 90s. Again, this is not a complaint. This is a good thing. Fishermen were able, in spite of the sanctuary being closed for a long period, longer than ever before, fishermen saw some significant benefits by that increased harvest. And I would expect that number to be higher again this year, even if we keep the sanctuary closed for the entire time period. There's the sanctuary. I think you're familiar with it. Let me draw your attention to this horizontal red line here as it will play in some of the Crab Committee's recommendations. The area north of that in particular we'll be talking about, and that area is about a third of the sanctuary in terms of geographic area. There were a number of discussions over the last 2 months by the Crab Management Advisory Committee. They primarily concerned two suggested areas of change. One is the period of time during which the crab sanctuary is closed, and the other is the period of time during which we prohibit the possession of dark sponge crabs. At an earlier meeting, there was a motion adopted by the Crab Committee to open the entire crab sanctuary from May 1st to May 15th. In other words, it wouldn't close. Right now it closes on May 1st. The proposal by the committee was to delay that closure until May 16th. At this month's meeting, there was further discussion of that concept, and there was a motion offered by the Tangier representative to open it or to close the sanctuary on May 16th above that horizontal line that I just showed you that is roughly at the level of the Rappahannock River and north. That was followed by a substitute motion to once again go back and open the entire sanctuary the first 2 weeks in May. That motion failed on a vote of 3-5 with two abstentions. They then went back and voted on the original motion to apply the two-week opening in May to the area above the red line, and that motion passed 7-0 with three abstentions. And that is the recommendation of the advisory committee. They then discussed the dark sponge crab issue. Of all of the regulations we have in place, it appears that the protection on dark sponge crabs is the most universally disliked by the commercial fishermen. It is subjective because it has to do with the color of the crab. When you see a lot of these dark sponge crabs in areas, it involves a lot of culling on the part of the fishermen, or it forces them to leave the area altogether. And there is some recent evidence by the Virginia Institute of Marine Science that the protection of the dark sponge crabs during the warm water temperature months, July and August, does not achieve the level of conservation we originally thought, because the handling of those crabs results in the mortality. And so you really have, the regulation saves nothing during the warm water temperature periods. Based on that information, there was a lot of discussion about eliminating that regulation. And ultimately, of course, the current rule says you have to protect, you cannot keep dark sponge crabs up until July 16th. At that point, the regulation goes away. The recommendation of the Crab Advisory Committee this year is to back that up to June 1st to allow the possession of dark sponge crabs starting on June 1st rather than July 16th. The problem is June 1st isn't always a warm water temperature month, and the BIMS evidence suggests that at least 60% of those dark sponge crabs do survive the handling process and should be protected. Nonetheless, the committee voted for the June 1st date. There was also some discussion of recreational fishery changes that ended up not being adopted by the committee, but I wanted to bring them to your attention. As you know, we sell a license that allows the use of 5 crab pots for recreational use. There is a prohibition against fishing those 5 crab pots on Sunday and outside of the period of June 1 to September 15th. The lone recreational crabber who was present at the advisory committee meetings offered motions to change that single prohibited day of Sunday to a Wednesday to allow recreational crabbers to crab during the weekend when they would have more opportunity to do so. The committee opposed that. In fact, there was no second to the motion. The committee opposed it on the basis that putting more people on the water on a Sunday when commercial crabbing is not allowed would result in greater opportunities for theft of crabs from the commercial pots. And so they were opposed to that, based on that. There was a little bit of discussion about potentially extending the season beyond the June 1 to September 15th period, but no motion was made, and so that matter did not need to be affirmed. Those are the committee recommendations. The staff recommendations are outlined in the evaluation, and they are number one, that we should amend the regulation that deals with the possession of dark sponge crabs because the science that is available suggests it's not providing the kind of protection we thought it was. However, we should lift that regulation starting on July 1st, opposed to the current regulation of July 16th, but not on June 1st as the committee recommended, because the science still suggests that the dark sponge regulation does provide protection during the month of June. Virginia Institute of Marine Science also opposes opening the season on dark sponge crabs during the month of June. Number two, we have regulations that have been in place now for many, many years that limit the sale of crabbing licenses. That regulation is due to expire at the end of this year. Previously, it's been extended for 3 years at a time. We think that regulation has shown its value over the years, and we would recommend that you advertise for public hearing an extension of that license sales moratorium indefinitely, so that all of those people who are currently eligible to be in the fishery would remain eligible. The only way new entrants could get in would be to purchase a license from someone leaving the fishery. And then finally, three, because we believe the regulatory package that we have in place is still needed until we develop a longer-term trend on recovery, we would recommend that you once again keep the crab dredging season closed for the following season, December 1, 2010 to March 31, 2011. Those are the staff recommendations. Dr. Lipsius is here and has an additional brief presentation from you that pertains primarily to these issues, these three issues that you have before you. There are members of industry who are here who I know want to speak to both the dark sponge crab issue and the opening of the crab sanctuary. And because the opening of the crab sanctuary issue would have to be adopted today by emergency regulation in order to affect the closures in the month of May, I know they would like an opportunity to speak to you about that. In other words, if it's advertised for public comment in May, it will be too late to consider their request. Be glad to answer any questions.
Questions, Jack? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jack, just to clarify this item two about the moratorium on license sales, that moratorium is essentially the operational part of the limited entry program that we have in place and that we have had in place since, 1999? Isn't that correct?
1999.
Okay. So this is just essentially putting that in place on a permanent basis.
Further questions? Sure.
What's your staff recommendation on the moving the date for the sanctuary?
At this point, we're not in favor of changing the dates on the sanctuary or the advisory committee recommendation, which was to open it for a two-week period in May. Again, last year was the first time that we had the entire area closed on May 1. We've seen some benefits from us. It just seems logical that you would want to include that. We did talk to the advisory committee about opening it for less than 2 weeks, and there were questions about whether that would be beneficial to anyone, and I think there may be some people here today to offer some suggestions on that.
Further questions? All right, let's hear from Dr. Lipsius and from members of the industry. Dr. Lipsius, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Commissioner Bowman. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
which this then is. Sorry. Basically, what I'm going to present is a summary. Thank you. Is a summary of the packet that you received for the meeting. Okay. Sorry about that. Let's see. Basically, that presentation is an update of the one that I gave you last year. It shows the spatial distribution of abundance of blue crabs across the years, and in particular for December through March, or I should say November through March, in the Lower Bay Winter Dredge fishery grounds. That's not it. Okay, thank you. So I'm going to try to cut this a little bit short because I know you've been here quite a long time. So what I'm going to show you is basically abundance contours. They're the same ones that I've shown you in the past, but I've added in this year's contours from the Winter Dredge Survey. So they're focusing on that lower part of the bay here, and one of the things that you'll note is I think some of the probable impacts of some of the regulatory or some of the management actions that we saw that were positive. So I'm going to show you, this is when we sampled with the Winter Dredge Survey, to remind you, in the Lower Bay only, Maryland doesn't do this, we've done this now for almost 20 years. We've not only sampled throughout the lower part of the bay, Virginia waters, but we also have repeatedly sampled in the area where the Winter Dredge fishery typically operates. From that, we do have estimates of the exploitation rate specific to that fishery, and we will be updating those this year as part of the stock assessment. So the usual pattern in 2005, as exemplified here, is that you have fairly high abundance in November and December when the dredge fishery is just starting to operate or before it does, and then a rapid depletion, as you can see here, very few females left by the end of the dredge fishery. Similarly, in 2008, we have some high abundances in November and December, but by January and February, we see almost no females. So it's actually very effective at depleting the females in the lower bays, winter fishery grounds over the dredge season. There are two elements to that before I get to the most recent data. One, it's actually what we would call a well-behaved fishery in the sense that when population levels drop to a low level, the fishery effectively closes down. It's not economical to go out and spend the fuel and so on. So if when you're at low abundance, that fishery by itself would not cause a collapse. So that's the good side. Flip side is that when there are more females there, that fishery catches a higher fraction of the females that are there. So it effectively impedes recovery. It would not produce collapse, but it will impede recovery because the more females that are there, it actually catches a higher fraction of those females. So now I'm going to show you 2009 and 2010. So this was last year, the dredge fishery. For the first time, we actually saw some very high concentrations of crabs in February, and then 2010. I mean, that just speaks to the pattern that all of a sudden we're seeing some phenomenally high concentrations that remain there. And this is one of the reasons why we cannot support opening up the sanctuary, because those females are going to reproduce. They're going to reproduce that summer. And so, firstly, if we were to allow the opening of the sanctuary, many of those would be harvested, and we're concerned that all of a sudden we would drop the spawning stock. Secondly, those same females we've shown from a 3-year tagging program will be caught after they spawn. So it's not a loss to the fishery, it's a gain to the spawning stock. And secondly, the fishery will get them, but at a different time, at a later time. Because we know that those same females that are in those deeper areas, once they spawn, actually then move into the shallows where they are caught by the typically by the pod fishery. So that's why I cannot support the opening of the sanctuary, as well as it's difficult to support reopening the winter dredge fishery at this time in its current state. Couple things about what's happening to the individuals. This is the age zero. So this is recruitment from last year, right here throughout the lower bay. So this is all small crabs, newly recruited crabs. We saw a couple spots of high abundance last year. This year there were abundant everywhere in all of our tributaries. These are the typical nursery grounds, I should say. Here we don't usually see them anyway. But the shallow water nursery grounds in all our areas, whether it's the Wicomico here, the Rappahannock, York, James, Mobjack, all of a sudden we're seeing very high concentrations, and I can tell you we've never seen the numbers that we're seeing this year. So we do think that's because we protected the spawning stock and that we got higher recruitment. And then here's the same thing looking at the last 3 years. So you're seeing a sequence and what's happened to all the age one. So this is age one plus is not just females but also males. Basically the mature segment of the population before all the regulations were in effect here, 2008, first year 2009, and now 2010. So we're seeing this maintenance of the high abundance. If you isolate females, you see basically the same pattern. You just don't see a lot of the males that you would in the tributaries. And that's effectively the situation. So in terms of what Jack had mentioned as far as staff recommendations, yes, we are in support of changing the black and brown sponge crab ban to July 1st, but not before that because of Jack's comments. We're not in support of reopening the winter dredge fishery at this time, nor are we in terms of expanding or reopening the sanctuary to harvest.
Well, thank you.
Any questions?
Mr. Banker, just a quick question. You said that there's a large percentage of females harvested in the winter dredge fishery. What is that?
That were harvested. Roughly 90 to 95% of the winter dredge fishery is mature.
They're mature females, 95%.
Questions? Well, Rob, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Okay. Let's hear from industry, then we'll go to the motion for request for public hearing. Who should be heard? Joe, come on forward, sir.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Joe Palmer, Boardman, Virginia Beach. I was going to do a pretty long presentation starting with the Endangered Species Act, but it's late. I know everybody wants to go home, but let's just say that crabbers are an endangered species of the federal government, or at least a geographical subset of an endangered species. But I'm going to cut right down to the beginning part of it. The numbers that were given by BMRC, the original target was to reduce the female crab catch by 34%. We all know that the first year we did over 34%, it was 37%. If I remember correctly, that was the number that we were given. The area that I'm talking about keep looking at is the lower part of the sanctuary. The numbers on that for the entire year were from 0.8 to 1.6% of the total crab catch of the year for females. What I'd like to keep open is from May 1st until May 15th, which would be from 0.4 to 0.8% on a good year. However, though, this year it wasn't a very good year out there. There's crabs now. But for the first time in a long while, I crabbed out in the bay. I haven't crabbed out in the bay in 10 years. Typically, I just crab up in Lynn Haven. I said, you know, I got to find out exactly what's going out there. So when I talk to somebody, I know what I'm talking about. And I'm not just getting secondhand information. So I set my gear out there on the 3rd of April. I didn't catch the first decent catch until the 15th of April. and I'm not the only one. I'm a fairly decent crayer. And there's a lot of people out there who cray out there all the time and are better than me. Mark Sanford, he's right back there. Troy Haney, he's not here right now. The crabbing in the beginning of April was so bad that Troy Haney picked his gear up on, I want to say, the 12th of April. He picked his gear up. He brought two boatloads of crab pots in. He was going back up the bay because he was catching nothing. And then the next day they caught crabs, he brought them back out. Mark picked his gear up, and he was going to Cape Charles. And then they caught some crabs and put them back out. There's no credit being given to us for the time from the 17th of March until the 15th of April. The crab buyback, or crab license buyback, took 15% of the gear, or what, 15% of licenses, 7.5% of those licenses were active licenses. And I spoke to Mr. Trowell said before, we spoke about the percentage of female crabs versus male crabs that were caught somewhere along the line with those active licenses. And nobody could give you an exact number. But even if it was 1%, 1% of those crabs, those crab licenses that were bought back would have caught females, it's still more than what the harvest would be in the bay from the 1st of May until the 15th of May. In 2008, the commission closed the bay. And they found out it was not legal for them to do. And guys stayed out there for crab from May 1st until the end of May. And yet the crab population still went up in 2009. I lost my track over here. Oh, yeah. That year, when the guys stayed out there crabbing, the exact words that were used by members of staff were the amount of crabs they caught out in the bay in May, not 2 weeks, but in the entire month of May was, and I'm going to quote you this, an insignificant amount. If 4 weeks is insignificant, 2 weeks is even less than that. We're talking 15 days here. Working days is 12, 13 at most. I know there's a tacit agreement with Merlin to reduce the female catch. Merlin says, well, you guys catch all the females and we catch all the males. If Merlin is so worried about it, then how come the Merlin fleet comes down here and fishes in Virginia waters during the month of April? Think of how many crabs those guys from Maryland are catching and that Virginia guys aren't catching. And then they're going to say, no, in Virginia they catch all the females. Well, they're catching them too. They come down here and do it. Peeler season's starting. I'd like to know how many female peelers they have up in Maryland. What's the percentage up there? Because they say all the female crabs from Maryland come down. Well, you're catching them all year long up there as peelers. We're asking for 15 days. Right now, they're catching 1,200 bushels a day in Cape Charles. That's what they're bringing in, 1,200 bushels a day. You won't see 1,200 bushels come through Lynn Haven in 15 days. So one day in Cape Charles, 15 days in Lynn Haven. It's important to us. And if you look at 1,200 bushels as a target number, that's it. That is an insignificant amount. It really is. So, with that being said, I'm asking to open it up until the 15th of May. The numbers are there. The 34% has long been met. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Who's next? Todd, is Todd here? Okay. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. Thank you all for hearing me. My name is Diane Dallas from Tangier Watermen's Association, and this might be the first time that you all have seen, you know, that line that was drawn on the map that Jack presented to you. But I can assure you, and I think Jack can probably attest to this, this is not the first time that we've had this conversation. From the first day that it was not passed but proposed, I told Jack, I said, Jack, this is going to ruin us. I said, May 1st, Tangier is always lighter. It's just the way that the bay works. Sea Salad, opens up March 17th, or like just the whole state does. But Sea Salad can actually catch crabs March 17th, and we certainly don't have a problem with that. Matter of fact, we think that it's a great thing, that everything comes off at different times, and everything, you know, not everything's hitting the market all at once. Cape Charles, usually the 1st of April, you're able to go down and you're able to catch a few crabs and you get your 2 or 3 weeks run of it, and that's it. And I don't know if Jack or Mr. Robbins remembers it, but to the Blue Crab Advisory Committee meeting, I told them that was on a Monday, that was the 19th. Our crabbers up home picked up the 17th. March 17th does not any good for us. It never will, as far as the sanctuary part of it goes. It will not do Tangier any good, the upper part of the bay. It wouldn't make any difference if you open it up New Year's Day. That's the truth. You'd catch the same thing New Year's as you would March 17th. It's just colder like that. Last week, when I told them that they picked up the 17th, that was at the very lower end of that red line. It's a place we like to call, it's a place we call Ghost Hole, and the right behind it buoys. You go a little bit further up in that, or up around the Smith Point area, it's another week. That didn't pick up until Saturday. I mean, you're talking 65, 70 foot of water out in that area. We understand, not saying that we agree with, but we understand where VIMS, where JIAC is coming from with the conservation areas. Again, I'm not saying that I agree with it, but we do understand it. But I hope you all understand that this is ruined our crabbing. People just picked up this Saturday in the Smith Point area, and they're got to move next Saturday. JIAC asked in the Blue Crab Advisory Committee meeting if the 15 days, did every day count? Is that how, that's how you put it, right? Well, yes, every day does count. We'd like the 15 days. But every day does count. 10, give us 10. Give us something. Give the boys something. Not everybody from home has the health, has the ability, has the opportunity to go way down the bay and sleep aboard a damp wooden boat. It's fabulous, I'm telling you. There ain't nothing like it. But not everybody has that opportunity. With that line that was showed to you, there's not going to be a big influx of people from down here moving up there. It's usually not that thick of crabbing. Mr. Lips is, I think, I'm sorry if I said your last name wrong, but his graph kind of showed that. We just don't, up in that area, in the Smith Point area, we just don't get, it's not just the sooks. We're not after... These sooks, I don't believe, are the ones. They might call them spawners, but we think they're just wiggling out the mud. We just want our shot at them. Yesterday, I worked by myself. I don't have a mate. I had eight bushels of jimmies yesterday. There's a substantial amount of jimmies in this area. It's a good jimmy sook ratio. It's not completely sooks. We're not asking for the world. We're asking for 15 days, but anything will help. Anything will help. If you ain't made a sin all spring and you're just picked up and you've got to move this Saturday, before Saturday, you've got to be moving Thursday or Friday to be out of there Saturday. And if you're just picked up and you're already got to start moving your rig after 4 or 5 fishing, let me tell you something. That's a bad, bad feeling. A horrible feeling. And I hope that you all will take this into consideration. I don't think these few days is going to make that significant of a difference in the numbers. Not that big of a difference. I thank you.
Who's next?
Make sure.
Good afternoon or evening. My name is Ty Farrington.
Hey, Ty.
Come on.
I'm with you.
I know you have going to come to a long day. I got copies here.
Please.
I'll hand out to
thank you.
It's a copy of the dredge survey and The I think I gave one to y'all. Say the blue with black sponge on top.
I got one some highlighted in the bottom that I don't have.
The one that's highlighted down in there.
No, it's just the top page. Anyway, did everybody get copies? Somebody take that line. And it really messed me up. Somebody, can I see the top cover, please? Somebody's got my cover.
The highlight got tired and went over at 4:00.
How about the second page? Look at the second page. Does it have?
Crab committee.
I think this is just what you're looking for.
No, they're all there.
All right.
All
right. I didn't give it back to you, Jerry.
No.
All right, I covered it up. I'm sorry. All right. Let me get started here real quick. I'm going to do this as quick as I can. I'm just going to spit it out. Y'all soak it up the best you can. I'm here. I'm a commercial fisherman. Been a commercial fisherman since 83. I'm on a member of the Blue Crab Management Advisory Committee, and I'm a member of the Virginia Waterman Association. I'm representing the association today. I'm here to recommend or to request the removal, complete removal, not a date, time, but removal of the dark sponge regulation. The removal of this regulation will be an economic boost to the state by creating more income and sales tax. It will take pressure off the male crabs. It will let the VMRC police have more time to enforce more important fisheries regulations. It will stop the waste of crabs and the waste of effort by the crabbers. 1997, the original dark sponge crab regulation was implemented. Look at the survey chart. The crab population dropped dramatically and stayed below average since until this year. This shows the dark sponge law and other older regulations did not work, and some of the newer regulations are working. My personal opinion is the larger coal ring and the summer sanctuary are doing the most help with crab population. In the copies of the October meeting, I have highlighted some very important information concerning the blue crab spawning stock and locations of the majority of these crabs. Also, the effect of the dark sponge crabs after being caught in the crab pot. Dr. Liskum, excuse me if I said it wrong, then studied preliminary results showed a large percentage of the dark sponge crab die after release, 60 to 70%, as stated on the fourth page. The same study indicates that the crab larvae also dies from the harvesting process. This indicates that the release of these dark sponge crabs will have little, if any, effect in rebuilding the crab stock. Mr. Grist indicated in the meeting that was to devise a more effective way to protect the blue crab spawning stock. The suggested increased sanctuary for the repeal of the black sponge regulation was made. In 2007, we were able to keep the dark sponge crab after 15th of July. This had no negative effect on the crab population. In 2008, the survey showed an increase, but it still left a month and a half of burden on the crabbers. On the third page of the meeting, I highlighted more reasons for removing this regulation. The addition of the sanctuary was meant to provide a protected migratory corridor for mature female crabs migrating to the mouth of the bay. Dr. Liston said, what is known is the female crabs do move down this existing deep water corridor, especially in June and early July, when down bay migrations are at their highest level. The deep water corridor is in the sanctuary where no crabbers are active. Further tagging data from the Smithsonian indicate once female crabs move into the deep water corridor, it tended to stay within that boundary. The March 2010 meeting, Dr. McConaughey stated that the most important spawning period to protect was the first of the season. Is that correct, sir?
That's correct.
Okay. And the normal 2 week, and it normally took 2 weeks after the crab busted out with eggs. This period is normally in mid-May to early June. June, at this time, the majority of the spawning female crabs are located in the sanctuary. Also on the fourth page, Mr. Robbins stated, the existing regulation appears to be creating a waste in crabs, dark sponge crabs dying, and a waste of effort by the fishermen. There is no scientific statistics that it works. It's only a theory. With all this in mind, please, for the state, for the crabbers, for the processing plants, for the marine police, take these regulations off the books. Let us keep what we catch.
Any questions? Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir. My name is Mark Faber, and I guess what I'm doing is I'm speaking for the Weber Sanctuary. I agree with Joe. You know, we really do need to try to cut these things down. And also, fact that basically there's nobody there. As he said, it was a number that's totally, maybe 5 or 6 people in that area. And I don't even know how to say it. You're talking about equality, people in Eastern Shore, being able to go to work, and down in the Lower Bay, that sanctuary is the only sanctuary that goes all the way to the shoreline. We have no place to work. We go in the river. When we go 11 miles up to Welby, we have to go 15 miles to Cape Charles to go to work. We all got skiffs. So, I mean, that's equality there for you. I mean, I'm not seeing it. I think somebody went to the General Assembly and asked to get the power to have the sanctuary closed. Is that correct? Somebody from here.
What happened was basically due to the timing, we had to ask because the sanctuary was included in code
now
versus a regulation.
Okay. My question is this. Can you go in that sanctuary and change the boundaries? Possibly give us, you know, like a 25-foot curve or whatever we can go to there.
That's cannot do that. It's established within the code. Uh-huh. We don't have the authority
But they did give the authority to
open or close.
Can you go before them and ask them for the authority to possibly change that? Well, I mean, you know.
General Assembly, we can't, per se. What have to happen is you have to have a delegate or senator go before them and present.
Did somebody from the VMRC go to them and ask them, ask the delegates for something? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I would see that. I mean, what y'all are doing, you're putting us out of business. Okay. That's the bottom line.
Okay.
I mean, you know, we just need to have a place to work. And there's no place to work at all. And, you know, they talk about, I'm just at a loss. This total thing. I mean, I've had a terrible spring. Terrible. And come Friday, I'm out of there. So, yeah, just please consider, you know, keeping it open. I mean, Mr. Dye said 10 days would be great. I mean, anything would help.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Okay, the first matter that's before the commission is a request for public hearing. Chair will entertain a motion.
So moved.
I'm sorry.
So moved. Public hearing.
For a second motion.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Taggart, second by Mr. Holland. Further discussion? Heard a lot of comments today that the possible relaxation of the regulations. And I know that we all know that they've been difficult times. But what we're seeing at the present time, based on Jack's comments, Dr. Lipschitz's comments, is we're certainly seeing in a stock that, from all indications, was on the verge of collapse. I just feel very strongly that we're not just but governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Maryland, Secretary of Natural Resources of both states would believe that we're on the right track to establishing or reestablishing this fishery to where it should be. I'm just very, very concerned at the present time of relaxing the regulations before we know that we're at a level that will sustain the fishery. So I just wanted to get that out. That's just my position. I'm sorry? Okay. Much has been made second for the discussion area. Okay, Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think as Jack said, we can't put an exact finger on which regulation has resulted in a change in the population, but I think we can draw some general conclusions. And when we look back over the history of the resource, at least over the last 15 years, I think during the period where exploitation was well above the thresholds that have been recommended by the Stock Assessment Committee, the population responded relatively poorly. And now that collectively all these measures have reduced exploitation below the target level, we've seen a very significant response to the population. And I appreciate your comments and the comments from our governor's office that there's still a lot of work left to be done. And I think I would echo your sentiment that it's too early to significantly relax the set of regulations that have gotten us where we are today. But I think there is still much work to be done, especially in working together with the industry to identify and incorporate the values that they want to see brought into the regulatory plan that manages this fishery. Because we've heard today about the difficulties with the black sponge regulation. We've been hearing about that for a long time. And I think in the committee, one of the messages that comes out of the committee's recommendation is that they would like to see that regulation relaxed or eliminated as soon as the health of the resource allows us to do that. We've also tried to incorporate the length of the season as one of the top priorities for management. And so what we have here in the staff recommendation is a slight modification of the black sponge regulation, but I think that is a priority that we'd like to see addressed in the future management of the fishery, but there's still a lot of work to be done with the industry and with the stakeholders to try to identify those priorities. But I think we'll have the luxury to do that as we get to a point where we have a biologically healthy and robust stock, and I think we're seeing that very quickly now. So this really does come, I think, as great news for the commission as well as for the industry.
Mr. Bell? I'm sorry, Mr. Baker.
I have a question for Mr. Travelstaff. Originally, when the sanctuary areas were discussed, it was really a corridor that was supposed to continue on up into Maryland, and it never did. Can you fill us in on why that never happened?
I don't have any of the details out of Maryland as to what, they went a different way with the management of their resource, more along the lines of controlling the daily output of the fishery, with trip limits and closed seasons and things of that nature.
The reason I ask that is last year was a very good example. I'm giving you secondhand information, but it's very reliable. All the rural boats come down in Virginia. There's very few Virginia boats that can go into Maryland, and I guess we're going to address that sometime in the future, maybe or maybe not. I'm really in limbo on that. But last year, the last day it was open, they were doing very well. Everybody in Virginia had to quit. The Smith Island boats moved them all over the line, just kept right on working on the exact same craft. It's not like they were up around Easton working on mail craft. They actually worked on the exact same craft that the boys in Virginia now are prohibited with, but the people from Rome are working on them the whole time. And you just follow them over the line. This year has been extremely cold. Mr. Dias talked about March 17th, and I'm a very big supporter, and I think because we really need to spread the seasons out. I don't think they caught anything home until the end of March because the water was just so cold. I have no problem with giving them a week or 10 days. I mean, I wouldn't have any problem with 2 weeks, but give them something. They have had a very bad winter. I can speak for myself. I can tell you, from the middle of December to the end of March, I made $102, and you try to live on that. I mean, you know, I'm very fortunate that it doesn't pose a problem for me, but it does for a lot of people. Now, these people have been out of work, and global warming, I guess, caused this very cold water effect all winter long, and massive amounts of snow and fresh water runoff that was extremely cold coming out of the rivers. They've lost a considerable amount of their season. And you know, I really would like to see that. This will have to be separate from that. But I would like to see us give them something a week. And anything they're doing is recouping some of the time they lost due to the fact that the winter was so cold. And I think it's been precedence on this, on oysters and different things we have done in the past. And I really think they need to help, and I don't think it will hurt at all, because as soon as these crabs go over the line, the boats from Smith Island and Chrisfield are going to harvest them, period. They're not going to be safe.
I guess I'm sympathetic with what you mentioned, Ernie. At the same time, I kind of look at it in a business perspective. They did harvest more crabs last year. We know that. We have a population rebound, but we also know that if we look at history, population rebounds and increases can be followed by sharp decreases. I am concerned in a fashion that we need more running room to address industry's concerns, but I don't know if we have that running room now. And it doesn't seem to me that we really do. I'd like to see another year of good harvest and good numbers, and then begin to adjust some of these regulations to accommodate the needs of the industry. But until we know our industry is truly healthy, I think our hands are kind of tied. That's my opinion.
Dr. McConaughey?
Well, I agree with most of what people have said. We've got a set of regulations that seem to be working. And we have to keep in mind that in the crabs, they're very short-lived, so we're really working with one-year class, maybe two-year classes. So we've had two good years, but all you need is one bad year, and we're right back down to where we were or could possibly be even worse. So we need to build this, in my opinion, build this stock up to where we're actually seeing consistently high numbers. And... Well, it appears to have been a bad spring. I understand that the price of crabs is continually dropping. So I'd like to give people some extra time. But, you know, we've got a request to open the lower sanctuary, and we have a request to open the upper sanctuary. So in reality, we would have to really open the whole sanctuary. And I don't think we're in a position this year to be able to do that.
Further comment? Motion on the table to go to public hearing. A motion made and second. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion carries.
Can we ask for clarification on what you want sent to public hearing?
Exactly. What's, that was basically what staff recommendation said.
Staff recommendation
was the motion.
Thank you.
Any other business on the crab item? There being none, the next slide.